can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
Okay, now, Don, this is new territory we're stepping into here. We're going to speak to an expat Australian from Cobram, I think he comes from. He comes from Cobram, and he is a multimedia star. He's a correspondent to the stars. He is a radio talk show correspondent to all the film stars and everything, and we're going to chat to him, hopefully, if we can get the phone working, and his name's Brad Blanks.
I've done all my research on Banksy, the graffiti artist.
No, it's Blanks.
Well, you told me, well, I've done all this work. I thought this man were...
This is the trouble, Don. You've got your ears painted on. You don't listen to what...
Well, I've done everything with... I thought he was coming out, all right, Banksy, well, on our podcast, but... Why is Cat ringing me? I'll turn this off. That's all right. It's just Cat.
Yeah, see if you can get it to ring while we're speaking to Brad Blanks, will you? That'll be interesting. Don, so we're going to ring him now. Let's hope
he'll have to carry this interview because I've done art. I've done all my research on art.
Oh, so I carry the interview. So what's new? You've contributed not one thing over the last 12 months to this.
It's very hard to get anything in when you're going. You're a control freak.
When you think I'm speaking to the wrong person.
Get him on the phone. Just a minute. I don't want to talk.
Just a minute. So we're going to speak to him and you can open up with, I thought you were Brad Banks or the graffitiist, and see if he stays on the line. So here we go. This is him. Let's hope he answers the phone. This is New York. Who's paying for this call? Are we paying for it? Are we ringing him? Or is he ringing us? God, gee.
Hello?
Is this Brad?
Yeah, Brad here. Who's this?
My name is Brad, Sam Newman from Melbourne, Australia, and I'm sitting opposite Don Scott from Mornington, Australia.
How are you?
I'm
disappointed.
Say hello, Brad.
Oh, hello, Brad. I'm disappointed we've got you on the phone.
Oh, Don, fuck.
I thought it was Banksy we were going to interview. You know, the graffiti artist, but it's bloody Blanksy. Yeah.
Brad,
where did you get that name from?
The real name is Ennals, but Ennals sounds like anal on New York radio, so they had to come up with a new name. And at the time, the black guy, the Tybo expert, Billy Blanks, was big back around 2000, and the American radio show I was on, they said, oh, let's just call him Brad Blank, the Australian Tybo expert. It sort of just turned into that.
Brad, if you could just overlook the fact that Don said, we're sorry that we've got you on. We thought we were getting Banksy on. We're very delighted that you're on, Brad. Don't worry about that. And I thought
he's trying to get something in. Yes, Brad.
Sam, in the moments that we had a Thai dinner in New York, downtown New York, very trendy place about 15 years ago with Billy and Gary and Hutchie, and it was a very nice dinner. But I've never met Don before. But Don, when I was a little boy, you used to scare me on the television. You were very, very tough. You were very tough on TV. You're a tough footballer, but very curt in your broadcasting.
What a great summary of a man's personality. He's abrasive, he's rude, he is, you're spot on. You couldn't have described him better in a thumbnail sketch, Brad.
Well, the only animals I know of are the people, the dairy farmers from Cobram. You're no relation.
That's them. That's my clan. My dad is Peter Ennals, and my uncle is Gary Hood Ennals from, you know, Cobram Footy Club.
He played a Footscray, didn't he?
We've just said that.
That's right, 65.
And very opportune that Don mentions that, Brad, because we're going to get on to the things we actually do want to speak to you about shortly, but very opportune that Don mentions about Footscray, because this is over there where you are, because you're a day behind. This is the 25th anniversary of the great Ted Whitten passing away from prostate cancer, and your dad would have played with him in the 60s.
That's right, yeah. I've got to tell you, Don and Sam, Ted was tough on the old man. Dad came down, plenty of bravado down to, you know, down to the western suburbs there, Ted was tough on him. I know the old man was a bit of a wild man, could play some good footy, but I think Ted might have cleaned him up one day in a practice match. I'm not sure how that one encounter went, but the old man got his name in the book, got two games, and then his father, Bob Ennals, who was a great dairy farmer there, supplied Murray Goulburn the milk, and Bob said, you can have the farm or you can keep playing this game down in the city. And the dad said, well, I better get back to the farm. And that's when he went back and fulfilled his destiny as a dairy farmer and still played very good football for Cobram and Yarrawonga.
So what happened to you, Bradley? You're a big man. Your father was a big man. Where did the ability go?
Not much good, mate. Couldn't jump. A bit soft on the centre. But geez, I could take a good mark at the right time when I could get an inch on the fullback. But yeah, you're right. Hopefully my kids turn out to be decent sportsmen. Yeah. So, but I wish I had been a better Cobram second footballer there for you, Don.
What did you say? Your kids turn out to be better what?
Horsemen. Better footballers than me.
Don, please. I'll bet you in retrospect, Brad, very glad you weren't any good at whatever you said you weren't good at, football, because you are a big man, but not necessarily for football. You are huge You are huge over in the US of A by being a correspondent to the Stars. And the research that we, or Don's done no research, the research I've done on you shows that you are just well regarded and highly respected by all the people that you speak to. And you are a star, and we're very happy to speak to you. Now, firstly, could I ask you, did the Australian accent get you into the front office just for a start? Was that a prerequisite for getting the job?
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, it was a lead-up to the Sydney Olympics. I was conveniently living in 2000 in Sydney, so I was right in Bondi, having a good life, and you know, I was actually an unemployed accountant at the time that I went to America for a friend's wedding. And I just had this one idea, and the idea was to be the Sydney Olympics correspondent for any radio station. And you know, I rang 20 stations one morning. I had a list and I went through the list. The first guy I called was Howard Stern. That was sort of the only radio guy I knew. And then I loved radio. I grew up listening to radio, you know, listen to you, Sam, and listen to, you know, Eddie on the Grill team and all that sort of stuff. And I loved radio. I always loved the poor man. Remember that guy that would call in to Eddie's show?
Yep.
Remember that? The poor man. I enjoyed the poor man. You know, he's a crazy bastard and he loved, you know, looking at Demi Moore's breasts at parties and stuff like that. I enjoyed it, his story. So I ring 20 stations. Howard Stern's receptionist hung up on me and everyone hung up, but one station picked up the phone and they said, all right, come in and pitch us this idea to be a Sydney Olympics correspondent for us. I went in the following morning and I thought they'd be a little crappy little station. And it turns out the station was above Madison Square Garden. I said, well, they must be all right. And I get up in there and this executive producer throws me into a radio studio. I'd never been into a studio before. And he says, sit down there. And there's people all running around me. And they said, put the headphones on. And then they did an on-air job interview with me of why I should be their Sydney Olympics correspondent. And it was two hosts, a guy called Scott Shannon and Todd Pettingill. And the station was WPLJ, which was the biggest station in the Disney conglomerate. I said, I have no experience. I'm just going to give you all the bullshit, what's going on there, the celebrities, who's shagging who, who's doing what, what's going on in the athlete village, how many condoms they're using. And they said, do you have any experience? And I went, no. And they said, you're perfect. You're hired. You're now our... So, Brad, our Sydney Olympics correspondent.
So, Brad, you rang them from Australia, did you, to say that you're here in Australia?
Yeah, that's right.
I beg your pardon.
I was over for a wedding. I was over for a mate's wedding. He was a buddy, Cameron Howard, champion ruckman for Cobram Footy Club as a young bloke, 17 years of age. Geelong should have got him, Sam. that's another story. He's marrying a beautiful young New York woman. So we all Cobram boys all flew over for the wedding. And when the wedding was over, I just had this one idea and just rang 20 stations up. I just thought, let's see if I can create something out of nothing.
Well, yeah. Sir, you create something out of nothing. I'm don't want you. You can tell us this if you like, because why not? Because no one else is listening except the people in Australia. But you are a star over there, mate. I've seen all the people you've interviewed. Oh. They regard you very highly. They don't just say yeah. They actually engage with you. Now, help us out here. Who are some of the great people you've spoken to? Who are some of the dickheads that you've spoken to? I see that you get on very well. I watched Humanity by Ricky Gervais the other day for about the 15th time, and that is so politically incorrect. It is amazing that people actually allow him to walk around in this day of being woke, as we call it. But you seem to get on very well with him. What is that man like?
Yeah, he's tremendous, a great guy. Now, the thing with Ricky was, I was a big early Office fan, which is a lot of Aussies were, and Aussies that lived in, you know, England. And it wasn't a hit in America in 2001, 2002. And he actually won a Golden Globe himself, the best actor for The Office. But nothing really took off for him. And I'd stand on these red carpets. This is getting to about 2005. And Ricky would be walking a red carpet, like at these massive, big Hollywood, you know, the SAG Awards was a notable one, which is one of the Oscar red lead-up events. Anyway, he'd be walking the red carpet, and I'd be the only guy there to interview him. And he'd hang shit on me, and, you know, he liked the size of my head. He said I'd look like a half-eaten buffalo head on me, or a head like an orange, or things like that. He liked big, round heads. So we'd get into a bit of a to-and-fro and have a good yarn. And just from those early days, even though he was a star everywhere outside America, he sort of he's taken a liking to me, and we create some good bullshit when we're chatting. So he's good, and he's a tremendous fella, and very funny. One of the quickest guys off a couple of steps to create comedy just from having a quick chat.
So your sense of humour is aligned, or Australian sense of humour is aligned with English better than American, Brad?
For sure. No, definitely. For sure. And that's one of my challenges over the last, you know, 20 years. Yeah, we all grew up, you know, you know, as young blokes, when you're having a chat, your mates are hanging shit on you and you're hanging shit back. And it's sort of, you stand in a group and you tease each other, then you tease a teacher, and it sort of goes like that. It's a different sort of setup, you know, in the States. And that's what I had to sort of analyze earlier. And I know you asked me before, Sam, if the Aussie accent helped. Well, it helped me get a job for the Sydney Olympics, but it then took me a year of pitching them ideas. And I got back there, back to New York, where they invited me for a trial. It took me 1 year for them to come back. And I came over for that trial in 2001, a month after September 11. And I stayed for another 9 years on that same show. But I had the Aussie accent, it was only going to last a few months. I had to bring them some stuff that would create comedy for the show, you know, create laughs for the show that everyone could be a part of, you know. And I learned quick that it wasn't going to be my wiki barb with them that was going to win them over. I had to bring stuff, be a foil at some stages, if that makes sense.
So, yeah, absolutely. So when you say you're from Australia, does anyone know that we are on the planet? Has anyone ever heard of us over in America?
No, that's a great question. Yeah. Now, the Americans are still in disarray to what we are and who we are. And I'd like to think that it's getting better, but the ones that have been there get it. It's like an inside joke to Americans that have been to Australia, because they finally see a country, and I've been saying this for a long time, where they talk like Americans. We talk like Americans. We have an environment that's open and free and fun and love the outdoors and love drinking and all that sort of stuff, but they don't think other countries like that exist outside their own. So the ones that go there and visit Australia, they're like, geez, this place is a ripper. And they, most of them say, what the hell are you doing here in America? You should be, or even in New York City, you should be back in Australia sitting on a beach. So they're still dumbfounded by and mesmerized by our country.
Hey, Brad, I watched some of those red carpet interviews the people do. Is there a pecking order on the red carpet, like a young, you know, like you starting off? Are you at the bottom of the line, or do you work up into a prominent position?
The food chain.
And the other question, so I'm asking you two questions. How do you get their attention? How do you get their attention? So, because they don't seem to be interested in doing interviews.
No. So you've got to remember on those red carpets, unless it's sort of the Oscars or a big event, they're not contractually obliged to talk to anyone. So they have to get the photos and maybe talk to Entertainment Tonight, you know, Access Hollywood, Extra, the big three shows that sit up the front of the red carpet. And then they don't have to talk to anyone. Now, when I started, I just saw a little bit of a gap. And I started doing red carpet, so I'm like, this is a free form of content, free form of getting some laughs and hopefully having a chat with a movie star. And overridingly, I was then getting invited into the parties where I could smash about 10 beers and eat 25 prawns off a bloody prawn statue that they had at these swanky Hollywood parties. So I had sort of underlying motives, but I'd always be placed, because I was a radio guy, and there was no other radio guys on these red carpets at the very, the aft end of the red carpet. So I'd stand at the end, and I knew then I'd have to hook them as they were walking past. Like Angelina Jolie, I'd have to yell something just to get her to stop or try to be, you know, charming in the first 20 seconds to have her stay. And over the first couple of years, I pulled it off. I got them to stay, and I hope I've moved up a bit, but I've moved up into the middle of the red carpet, Sean.
So are you the Norman Gunston of the red carpet nowadays?
Yeah, well, I got to say, I reckon in the early days, the first 5 years, definitely Norman Gunston. Even the first 10 years. I was a screw-up just trying to have a pub chat with people. And, I'm a big, massive sort of looking dude, you know, probably sweating up, you know, when I was getting nervous in front of a beautiful woman. And that's sort of how it went. The interviews were designed, or just not necessarily designed, but they were fucking up as I was doing them. And that was when the best parts would come, when I'd back myself into a corner and I'd have to fight my way out of it. And the more nervous I got, the better the interview. But in the last few years, I've had to become quite slick now, and I'm an older man now, so I'm probably trying to look for a longevity. Well, older man, I'm 45 years of age, so the style's changed a bit, but I'm still trying to have fun.
Now, Brad, I've done a bit of a research on you, and it says that you started in 2002 on the Tom Barnard Show. Is that right? And you got the gig because you said you'd go and watch the Lennox Lewis Mike Tyson title fight. Have I got that right? And he's in Minneapolis.
Minneapolis.
Right. Yeah, you got a bit of that right, exactly.
Minneapolis?
Minneapolis, I'm sorry.
Minneapolis.
It's Minneapolis, isn't it? Minneapolis.
Yeah. Don's a wordsmith. He's picked me up, and I appreciate him doing it.
Go ahead. So how it works is you're like this. So I'm on the Scott and Todd Show on PLJ, and as I said, it's a big Disney, you know, owned station. They owned about, you know, 100 stations across America. And one day the executive producer did a conference call, and they all share ideas, you know, like they share, like maybe the Sydney and Melbourne footy show, Sam, they share ideas, right? Like the good old days. Anyway, they're sharing ideas, and the producer goes, well, we've got this Australian guy, Brad Blanks, and we just sent him down to the New Orleans Super Bowl. That was the one that Patriots won, and he did this amazing interview with a prostitute who reckons she banged at the edge from U2. And it went silent on his conference call. 40 executive producers across the country went silent. And one guy through the silence goes, in a thick Minneapolis accent, he goes, hey, I'd like to talk to that guy. And it was one guy said he'd like to talk to me. So he rings me a minute later. This weird dude, his name was Bryce from the Tom Barnard Show, morning show, which is the biggest show in Minneapolis, in the Midwest, you know, about a million and a half people. And he rings me up and he goes, I hear you interview prostitutes. And I'm like, oh, shit, I had to scratch my head. So I said, I interviewed one back at the New Orleans Super Bowl. And little does he know that the woman that I interviewed was really just some college girl, and I told her to make out she's a hooker, right?
Fantastic.
So I made up this whole saga, right? It's turned into something. So I'm like, yeah, I interview hookers. Yeah, that's right, yep. And he's like, what's your next event? Are you going anywhere? And I said, I'll tell you what, next week I'm going down to the Lennox Lewis Mike Tyson fight in Memphis. And you know, and he goes, could you, do you reckon you could get us a hooker down there? I said, I reckon I could get a few hookers at that.
fantastic.
So I get down there, and as you guys would remember the fight, it was such a big event because it was outside Las Vegas, and it was in that big pyramid they had built down there in Memphis, and it's in downtown Memphis, and I remember my guys in New York, Scott and Todd, I told them on the Monday, I said, I'm broke at this stage too, guys. I've got no money. I'm making a pittance from radio. But I knew I had to go because I thought I was going to get fired from radio eventually. So I said, I've got to see a heavyweight title fight in my days. And I got press credentials where they look after you really well. So I said, I'm going to pay my own way to go down there. And I went down, and Scott Shannon, who I'm still working with today, but he said at the time, he goes, we're not going to put you on the radio from a boxing event because we have like 55% women. It won't go with our audience. I said, all right, mate, don't worry about that. I'm going. See ya. So I go down there, and as soon as I get there, all the real life journalists are trying to interview Tyson and Lewis, and all I'm trying to find are hookers. So I go out on the street, like I'm down back street the first night I'm there, just trying to find a woman of the night. I'm like, this is like the Tuesday night before the event, and prostitutes don't really fly into boxing events until the Friday, you know, until the Wall Street guys fly in. So I'm out there trying to look for the local ones, and I couldn't find any, and I'm approaching women, how you doing, and want to chat. Anyway, I was having no luck. I was a bit frustrated. So the following day, the press go to a minor league baseball match. So I go along to the minor league baseball match, and there's this really chirpy girl serving all the press hot dogs. And I said, shit, I'm going to turn this girl into a hooker. And anyway, I go up to her. I said, is there any chance I could do an acting scenario with you and make out that you're a local woman of the night here in Memphis? And she said, yeah, sure, no worries. Yeah, go for it. And the brilliant thing about Americans, every one of them can act straight away. They're like it's like an improv club, and she just turned into this amazing woman of the night, and what she's going to do with all the celebrities flying in, and how Justin Timberlake's in town, and geez, David Hasselhoff's coming, and John Daly, and they're her targets, and it just turned into a rip. And I played that on Tom Bernard's show on the Friday morning. It was my first ever cross with him. And him and I, we talked for 25 minutes with that interview right in the middle of it. And they couldn't believe that the first time fantastic. I debuted on their show was with a woman like that.
Fantastic. Anyway. And as Woody Allen, I think, once said, a starlet is any woman under 30 who's not actually engaged in working in a brothel at the time. That's what he reckoned about starlets. Yeah. That's what he. So, just before we get off Minneapolis, I think we've heard of that for far more serious reasons, haven't we? Recently, is that where George Floyd actually met his demise?
That's correct.
We'll get onto
that's
that.
Right. Yeah, correct.
We'll get onto that just that side of life over there directly. Incidentally, who's paying for this call? Did we ring you or did you ring us?
Yeah, you rang me. Holy so, yeah, thanks, Sam. That's
shit,
good.
We're going to finish it soon, then.
God, we've only got two more questions. So who would, if you had your wish list, who is someone that you would love to speak to more than anyone present day?
Yeah, Tiger Woods. I'd love to talk. I'd love to break down blow by blow of what happened with the Swedish misses and the golf club and how that unraveled that day.
Yeah, right. So you'd have to go to a golfing event, probably. How do you reckon those questions would go after he's just won the Masters for the second time?
No good, mate. Look, isn't he the most controlled human being in the history of sport? And he's loosening up a bit, so I don't think that would happen in the first interview, but I reckon over time maybe I'd get him. Maybe 10 years into his retirement, he might come clean on that one.
What about Jeffrey Epstein's offsider, Ghislaine Maxwell? She'd be a good get.
Yeah. Oh, would she be good? She knows where the bodies are buried, doesn't she? The stuff that she's seen. You know,
and speaking of hookers.
Speaking of hookers, she's the madam, isn't she? She's like the one controlling all the young girls, it's quite nightmarish in a way of what she could do and just be so, delusional. But she was addicted to it, I guess, addicted to helping her friend Jeffrey.
What about expats in New York?
Mel Gibson?
Mel Gibson, I ran into Mel. He's not in New York, but I did interview Mel Gibson earlier in my day in 2003. And he remembered my old man selling him a tractor in Myrtleford, which was great. He owned a big property in Myrtleford, if you remember.
Yeah, he did.
Mel fell out of a bit of favour because he belted the Catholics or the Jews, or he belted some department of religion over there, didn't he? And he became persona non grata for a while.
That's right. Yeah, the Jewish people. He did that. He got pulled over in Malibu, I think. One of the Pacific Highway there in LA by the police, and he went on some sort of tirade. And he's had a couple of films come back and pop. And it's a funny one when you go back and still watch Braveheart. You're like, oh, Mel, what a legend. But you're right. He's sort of gone the other direction. He's on the hormones, I think, though. He gets the stem cell stuff pumped into him, so he's probably going to live to 150.
A youth drug. Yes. I think he directed a great film. I might have this wrong. Called Hacksaw Ridge.
The Japanese.
About Desmond Doss, who was a conscientious objector, except he didn't want to fire guns in the war, but he said he'd save people because he was a medic. I think that was Mel Gibson. I might have got that wrong, Brad. I get a lot of things wrong.
He directed it. No, you nailed it. You nailed that. Yeah, he did direct that. Definitely did.
What about a couple of guys like you that have really taken the plunge, but they had an AFL connection? They're in New York. Can I give you a couple of names? I don't know whether you catch up with them. Yes. Nick Stone, number one. Yes. Who played at Hawthorn? That's where I first knew him, but he went to St Kilda. I think he was drafted by Collingwood. He set up a string of coffee shops over there. Have you come across him?
I personally haven't met him, but I know a lot of people that have mixed in his circles. Yeah, he's nailed it. Blue Stone, and I actually was on an interview. I was interviewing some guy one night on a red carpet, like at a Shark Tank event. And I interview Mark Cuban, and he's a good bloke, and good chat about Australia and stuff. And then the next guy who came down the red carpet, who's sometimes one of the guests on Shark Tank, he goes to me, Bluestone. I wish I had his name. He's one of the investors in the Miami Dolphins, Florida guy, and he goes, Bluestone, I've just invested in them. They're going to be the next Starbucks of America. So Nick Stone does pop up.
Okay, what about a fellow that wore number 6 at Melbourne, Glenn Lovett?
Yeah, Glenn's a legend. Oh my goodness, to be a single man in New York City, what a I'm happily married with 3 kids, but I look in awe of him. And a lot of my chats when I talk to him about life is like, how do you handle this swiping left and right on your phone? And the women just magically appear after you do that. And so he has very good single man stories of being in New York City. From what I gather, it's very much like Sex in the City.
Single man stories. That's about as politically correct as you can get, mate. You mean sexist stories he's got. Single man stories. No, I love that.
Like going out for dinner and splitting the bill and then, being nice to each other and then getting Ubers to their own houses.
So what's he doing over there, Brad?
He's going good. Like, he's set up a pretty good life for himself. He, has summer out in the Hamptons and in the city.
Yeah, but what's he doing for work?
I think at the moment he's having a bit of a holiday.
Well, hang on. Hang on. Our producer's just shown us a picture of Glenn. Glenn Lovett. He looks like he's lost weight. He's still got his bald head.
Yeah.
Hell, the bird, he's got his arm around. Shit, she's not bad. She's got tattoos down her left.
No, he does.
It's a person, Don. We're gender neutral here. It's a person that he's got his arm around. Yep. Could be anyone.
Well, this...
Yep, yep. A good life. Look, Don, he has a very good life. Don, come over and visit him. we'll fire him up and, you know, he'd love to see you. He'd love to take you out on Tinder.
So he'd give us a hand pass, do you think?
He doesn't know what Tinder is.
Yeah, I think he'd give him it. Look, if Don wears a beret, Don will not need any device to pick up women. The women will flock to you, Don, and your new fashion sense.
Yeah. I'd love to tell you the conversation we had last week about Don's sexual prowess because to do with injection. Anyhow, we won't go on with that. Now tell me this. You've spoken to some very captivating. Who would be the most captivating person that you've enjoyed speaking to? That's A and B. Who are the biggest dickwits that are out there thinking they're something they're not?
Yeah, I'll tell you. Yeah, off the bat, Angelina Jolie before. She was the most engaging in my early years. She'd always stop and have a chat, and she'd love, you know, grilling you with your eyes. She'd look into your eyes, and she could sense nervousness in me. And I enjoyed that dominating feeling from one of the most beautiful alien-like human beings I've ever seen. And she'd just lock onto you, and I'd feel my hands shaking when I held the microphone to her. And but she was just captivating, and I interviewed her quite a few times, and she was, incredible.
She's the daughter of, I can't think of his name. What's his name?
John Voight.
Oh, John Voight. Yeah, that's right. Voight. From that great series called...
Midnight Cowboy.
No, the great television series.
Ray Donovan.
Fantastic Ray Donovan was. Yeah. Is it still going?
No, I think it's done. It's ended. Yeah. Sure,
sorry.
But he's good. That guy's a tad out. On that note, I'll use that to tell you about the toughest interview, and that Liev Schreiber is a tough interview.
Married an Australian girl.
Like he's just Naomi Watts. Yeah, they've what do they call it now? They're happily split, and they share the kids and all that sort of uncoupled or whatever you do.
He was
a tough interview. Very silent. Gave you nothing, and when that happens to me, blood forms in my head. I start sweating, veins pop out of my big forehead, and I'm just sitting here trying to have a laugh. And Jesus, hard bloody work. And someone like him was hard work. Not denying he's a fantastic actor, and you know, probably a good bloke when you're having a beer with him, you know, talking about life. But Jesus, when you're trying to have an interview with him, it's bloody disaster.
Are you honest and say this is hard work?
Not hard work. No, exactly. But look, mate, but I'm still driven by to get some. I have to bring in audio the next morning. That's how I always sort of drove myself. I'm going to get the audio, get on the piss that night, and then next morning hopefully make it into the show. I mean, I've had mornings where I've slept through the show because I'd finished the night up at 5 a.m. again in the early day. That was at the MTV Video Awards in about 2002, and I woke up at bloody 7:30 a.m. with a, you know, a 150-kilogram fat intern kid standing on my bed doing a live radio broadcast back to the show. And I'm like, oh, shit. And I'd just been 2 hours earlier, I'd been in a bloody nightclub with Anna Kournikova on one side of me and Gwen Stefani on the next, and my head kind of exploded. But anyway, that was a good old day.
So I'm not asking, of course, about you doing this, of course, Brad, but are analgesics and uppers and downers and general things that keep you stimulated through the night, is this rife in the circles that you move in?
No.
I know you don't do it.
I haven't seen celebrities lining up or doing things like that at these sort of shows. No, but I'm not denying the fact it's probably right through the whole place. You know, I'm pretty naive to that sort of stuff.
So we do have a couple of people that keep us on the map over there. I know Russell Crowe, although he's a New Zealander, but I think he claims Australia. Mel Gibson, Nicole Kidman, Margot Robbie. They probably, people wonder why, they probably think we've got about 1 million people live in this continent over here. They wonder how we could produce anything.
And you also the most beloved out of them you missed is Hugh Jackman. Love that fella. He's beloved in New York, and Americans just love this bloke. And he doesn't put a foot wrong. He is he's quite perfect in what he does, in the shows he puts on, and being a good bloke. But I don't think they think we. They know we're talented, and all the actors and actresses come over and manage to steal the roles of Americans. But one day they'll put their hand up and say, "Geez, we've got to get these American actors to be a little bit better." But the Aussie spirit keeps on going, and I think it'll continue.
Now, I've been Googling you whilst you've been talking because, as I said earlier, I thought we were doing Banksy, but we got Blanksy.
You idiot.
Now, in the Google, it's got received an Emmy for Vancouver Olympics with NBC. Now, what did you do, an interview and received an Emmy for your interview?
Yeah. This is a good way how to get an Emmy. I was their sole. This is in 2010 when video on the internet was sort of just starting, and I was their sole personality for NBC on NBCOlympics.com. And most of the work I was doing was sort of, trying to do funny interviews with snow skiers and snowboarders, and that went pretty good. But I think the most clicked on video was me in a hamburger shop eating the biggest hamburger in Canada. And somehow they kept that on the front page for about 5 days. So I'm like, that got me a sports Emmy. So I'll take it, fellas. I'll take it.
So speaking of large hamburgers, we were discussing the Depster, Johnny Depp, and his wonderful bride, ex-bride,
Amber Heard.
Who left a steamer in the bottom of the Depster's bed, and that all hell broke loose. How has that been covered over there, and how's the Depster and Miss Heard going?
Yeah, brilliant stuff. Every day on radio we've talked about it, and every day it's a news story. And and when the steamer, as you said, got left on the bed, that was just that was the high point of that whole libel trial out of London. And the best part, like how she actually tried to pass it off that poor little dog Boo got blamed for it, didn't he? Poor little puppy.
Yeah, Pistol
that dog's
or Boo.
Been through hell.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say the cleaning lady testify that the turd was actually too big for Boo or Pistol's ass. I think that was the test. Like, it actually had to have been a woman's bottom. Well, not a man or a woman's bottom.
Yes,
to have produced
well done.
Something so steamerish.
Fact. Yeah, I'd like to see the cross-examination in court. The defence going through that line of questioning. Now, incidentally, Brad, I don't know how you'd place for time, but we're going to keep going with this until you tell us when you got to go somewhere.
I'm good. I'm happy.
Now, what about a big star over here and everywhere, of course, is Ellen DeGeneres. I wonder if you've ever tried to interview her husband, or not her husband, her wife, Portia de Rossi, who's a Geelong girl. When she came out here, she said she wouldn't be interviewed. This is how well she's going. She said she wouldn't be interviewed by men. Only women could interview her. I thought that's pretty demanding of someone who just is into marrying another woman.
Right. Yes, that's sexist, right, Sam?
Yeah, that's
He's done
what
the reverse sexism on you.
That's why I was staggering, stumbling for that phrase. I was, yes.
I interviewed her in 2005, and it was before Arrested Development kicked off. It was on Fox Television, and that was sort of her biggest success, that sitcom. And she was awesome. And, she picked up what I am, this, the country lad trying to have a laugh of her, and she was delightful. And I think that's before Alan had headlocked her into their relationship.
Headlocked her.
I think Alan's very good at headlocking. Alan became, she became a massive, activist, I would say, in 1997 when she came out on television. And I know that caused a few problems for her girlfriend at the time, which was Anne Heche, who actually lost a lot of film contracts, sadly, because of that relationship that was sort of 20 years ahead of its time. So by the time 2005 rocks around, Ellen at that stage was a year into a show, but already a massive star in the United States. So, yes, she would be the one laying the headlock on little Portia at that stage.
Now,
of the relationship,
now Brad, incidentally, we're speaking to Brad Blanks, a star of North American radio and television and a personality. I'm just dipping a toe in the water here, Brad. You can say whatever you like. Why are people so biased against Donald Trump, particularly the Hollywood set, and what is going on over there? And have you ever interviewed Robert De Niro, who is about the most outrageously, disgracefully, disgracefully abusive person I've ever met about a president?
Yeah, all right. So with Donald, I could say the Hollywood set from what I've heard, and you've probably answered that with, in terms of De Niro's FUs at, you know, on live television, where he's had to be beeped out because he said that about Trump. The whole anti-Trump thing, this comes down to the fact that he's done so many missteps, and I think they've just been in terms of how he's not so presidential. Now, I know you're probably going to say, well, that's why he has been a good president, but I'm just trying to give you the surface picture of it, how these, well, Hollywood types who were mingling with Donald for a very long time. He was in that, you know, he's definitely in the New York scene, and elite. Then he went to LA as a part of becoming a TV star himself, that scene out there. Not necessarily accepted, but in that game, was probably the biggest TV star of the, you know, 2005 to 2008. But I think he's just, over the last 4 or 5 years, just delivered just missteps in how he approached things when he's in front of a microphone, and that, regardless of policy, that's the first thing, you know, people have looked at.
So is he supported by the rank and file, but the establishment he upsets? Would that be a fair assumption?
That's right. Yeah, and I think from, if you're going to go into the Republican Party side of things, the rank and file probably enjoy him coming in and dropping, the rank and file Republicans dropping these bombs. They're still able to get what they want. So I'm talking about the senators, the congressmen, Republican governors. They've been able to use him as a bit of a shield to get what they want through. But look, it's going to be an interesting, you know, the convention kicks off tonight,
yes.
The Democratic convention. So they'll be all preaching how they've got to get Donald out. But this is a guy that sort of has licked his lips in the last few weeks. He was struggling, you know, in terms of the head-to-head with Biden, but some say he's getting a lot more even, and I think he'll my take personally is that he'll just go after the VP pick, Kamala Harris, and just run her into the, use that as a political, you know, tactic to run her into the ground over the next 2 months, three months.
And as soon as he does that, he'll be branded as being a racist. So what about another presidential hopeful, Kanye West, who is the husband of Kim Kardashian? Have you ever come across those two?
I have. I was at the Sundance Film Festival. This is in 2003, and it was January. And I'm at this swanky party, and they introduced this guy to start singing. He starts rapping, and no one looked at this guy. And he got up on the – he climbed onto the – inside a tent, he climbed up onto the roof within the tent, singing, putting on a show. I'm like, this guy's like a Spider-Man. This guy's unbelievable. So he finished his set. He came down onto the ground. I went up to him. I said, mate, who are you? He goes, oh, I'm very humble. He goes, oh, I'm Kanye West. I said, you're unbelievable. This is great. And I showed him my big, fat, white belly at the time. And I said, if I have a big, white belly like this and I love you, you're going to be a star. And he said, oh, yeah, thanks very much.
What year was that?
And that was about 2003. Jeez. That was the beginning of 2003. And by May of that year, he was huge, superstar, became a superstar. Released his first record, went number one, and, it was unbelievable. And but it was good to spot him early. But he's off his rocker now. Like, he's obviously the news out of here is that, you know, Jared Kushner, you know, Trump's son-in-law, has been talking to him every day on the phone, hoping that he somehow
get the black
can
vote.
Run or disrupt the election.
I think he's trying to garner the black vote.
That's right. Yeah. So that's but he's in bed with TikTok, Sam and Don. I know you guys are probably. The big news again today is that he's in bed with TikTok, and he wants to release a version of TikTok called Jesus talk, which is very Kanye-esque, I guess. So
now, Brad,
the latest Kanye news here.
Yes. Brad, you're going to just have, I think I know what TikTok is. You're going to have to explain to Don, who's sitting there.
It's a biscuit, isn't it?
Don looks like he's been at a pinball machine. His eyes are going round in his skull. What is TikTok, just for the layman or lay person?
So the simplest format is that you can go on there and mime songs. So you'll be sort of mouthing a song and it would play over you. But it's morphed into more people just doing goofy little videos and pranks and stuff. So an example for Don, if Don dressed up in his Hawthorn football kit that he used to wear and went down to Glenferrie Road and just did maybe 20 different videos of him teaching people how to ruck, he would probably go viral on TikTok. I think that'd be fantastic. There you go, Don. Go viral. Get anything viral, Don. Just go viral.
So, Brad, you're, I presume, should know this, you're speaking to us from New York.
Yeah, I'm out in Long Island. New York's quite a ghost town at the moment. It still is.
And the
big thing now is trying to figure out if it comes back, if it's going to be as vibrant as it's been in the past.
Okay, so that's the reason I've mentioned that is because the news we get over here that not getting political or just because all we hear about is that the Black Lives Matter people have almost burnt the city to the ground, and they're doing that throughout most of the states in America. Black Lives Matter are very sensible thing, except it's been hijacked, we understand, by activists and Marxists and bloody everyone else. How is it going? And Bill de Blasio's the mayor. He's getting a belting over here. I don't know if it's right or not, but Andrew Cuomo, who's overseen 6,000 deaths with the COVID virus in nursing homes. How is that all portrayed, or is that a bit exaggerated?
No. How you've pitched that is exactly what's happening here from a media standpoint. But de Blasio, the mayor of New York, is an interesting one because you'll sit there and talk to people who are pro Cuomo and anti Trump, but then de Blasio's name will come up and they just hate him even more than Trump. So it's really interesting dynamic with de Blasio, what he's done. And I mean, that comes back to people that live in New York and are probably, are still fearful to go out and about, or, just because they're reading the media and they're reading that the gun violence is, up five times than it's ever been before over previous years. And the homeless population in New York has just exploded and they don't have enough, police to stem that. And also, on another thing, de Blasio's opened up hotels up like on the Upper West Side and Upper East Side where the hotel owners are getting paid more than they would if they had regular folks in there by putting homeless into rooms. So there's a lot of things going on in New York where the New Yorkers are not happy.
And we had Andrew Bogart on here a couple of weeks ago, Brad, and he made an interesting statement when these riots were going, that where guns are legal in the various states in America, there was absolutely no violence at all. It was in the non-gun toting states where the violence was. Is that correct?
Well, it's that whole red state, blue state thing. You're right. Minnesota was the first to kick off, obviously, because that's where George Floyd passed. But then you mentioned New York before, where you would have got the footage of the day after in downtown New York City for two nights in a row. It was like a scene out of a movie, what they did down there. And you're right, New York doesn't have the gun, has a more tighter gun laws than states like Texas or Alabama. And the media is probably not highlighting those states down there if there was any Black Lives Matter marches or whatever down there. But New York was the one that sort of got captured the globe, the world's attention with what the hell, kicking in windows and rioting and looting. It was madness.
Now, what turns you on about films that you see or concerts you've been to or the people who make them? Do you watch or go to those films or concerts because of the people you know who are in them or the script?
No, that's right. No, I was a film guy when I got into this, and I love movies and I love TV, and that's how I got into this. So yeah, when I see, I've got to tell you though, Sam, the last few years, it's hard to find good films these days, and I'm still in there trying to interview people, and that's the struggle when you're in the game so much. I'm with these people I interview, I'm trying to get a laugh out of them, and hopefully they're entertaining and upbeat and good. But like in another example, I don't know if I mentioned Tom Cruise before.
No.
Like Valkyrie, I thought was Valkyrie was a boring film, but I interviewed Tom Cruise and he actually knew that I thought his film was boring. And halfway through the interview, he goes, "Did you fall asleep during my movie?" And the fucking funny thing is, I actually did fall asleep during Valkyrie. So, but I still need to get a good interview out of Tom. But you mentioned De Niro before. I mean, every one of De Niro's, most of De Niro's older stuff that I loved, and the reason I love movies and that. And I've had a good tussle with De Niro over the years. He's not very good at talking, but as you would say, at bashing Trump, he's very on point with his word usage. But De Niro, I've interviewed him about 16 times, and he's not a guy known for interviews, and they're all about two-word or three-word answers. And I now have a compilation of a Robert De Niro series of about a minute and a half of just absolute gold of him just saying absolute nonsense to me. So I treasure those interludes with De Niro.
So, and Valkyrie, if I remember, was that about the Germans or Hitler, or was it? No. What was Valkyrie?
Yeah, that's like killing Hitler.
Oh, it was too, yeah.
Yeah, killing the assassination of Hitler. Yeah, I should give it another whirl because I did bloody fall asleep during that one, But yeah, it's hard to nail down good films. I love all of Quentin Tarantino stuff. I thought his one last year, the one with Brad Pitt, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood,
no.
I thought that was fantastic. And
your great,
you didn't like that.
Your great friend Rod Law, who got us this interview with you, he said you've got to watch Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Seriously, I've never seen so much.
You didn't like?
No, I thought it was
shit.
I thought it was crap.
Damn.
But that's why. Brad, that is what the world. That is why the world is different. I thought it was.
No, I love that movie. I thought it was. Quite, what about? All right, here we go. What about Parasite, a Korean film?
I didn't mind that. I started to watch that, but got a bit bored with it halfway through. But I thought that was at least different, even though it won an Oscar and not an Indonesian. What is it? Where has it come from? Taiwan? No, Indonesia.
Korea.
Well, they're all the same.
Yeah. What about, all right, here you go. What about Dunkirk? Dunkirk.
Yes, I saw Dunkirk. I thought it was okay. Right. I tell you that you'll love me. Right. Love me telling you what I like, Brad. But I like the ones. I like the ones that are actually true, although they might be embellished a bit. Hacksaw Ridge was fantastic. Have you ever watched a film called Hidden Figures about the three black
women who
put the space program on the map before computers? They were mathematical geniuses,
yes.
And they were ostracized because of the black and white. They were segregated. That is one of the best movies I've seen, and along with a movie which have cost $2 to make or $2 to make, called The World's Fastest Indian, about the motorbike in Bonneville with Sir Anthony Hopkins.
He was the New Zealander.
Yeah.
The New Zealander on the motorbike.
Yeah, I know you're a film buff, Sam. I know you're good on the film. No, that's good. You're good choices there.
Well, because they're true.
We need... Right.
A bit Rush.
Is there anything you like? Is there anything...
Rush.
Which one? Rush.
Rush was with Nicky Lauder and James Hunt and the bloke...
Yep, very good film.
An Australian bloke. I think he's an Australian, isn't he? Hemsworth. Is he Australian?
Hemsworth.
Jeez, I should know that.
He's Australian. Yeah.
Well, that was a great movie.
Philip Island. That is a fantastic movie. You're right.
Give us some of your... don't worry about mine. Give us some of your...
Here we go. Let's go back. Let's go deeper. I mean, it's a Don Scott film. What about... and I'm getting back to De Niro. What about Deer Hunter?
Yes.
Yeah,
what about
Deer Hunter? So-so.
So-so. See if you can get us to say, wow, you're on the money there, Brad. See if you can just get us to say that
Here we go. Here we go. What about Die Hard 1 and 2?
No, 1 I thought was good.
Die Hard.
Yeah, 1 yep. was, I didn't
two?
Mind. Is
the
that
1?
One? 1's good.
And, 1's and good, not 2, the no, one at the airport.
No, 1.
And what was the one? Right. What was the movie that they did about series about six of them? That Mel Gibson did the first one.
Lethal Weapon.
Lethal Weapon was great. And what about RoboCop? Yes. Peter Weller.
RoboCop was very good.
The first
one.
Here
you go. While we're on, now we're going. What about Beverly Hills Cop?
First one.
Brilliant. Must be.
Right now.
First one.
Now, Brad, I don't know if your Mel Blanks is a relation to Mel Blanks, who is the voice characterization of Bugs Bunny and all those people, but you're just Mel Blank. You're just Brad Blank, not Mel Blanks.
Brad Blanks.
Right. So you are Blanks. You're, Mel Blank, was he have an S on the end of
his
name?
No, he had B-L-A-N-C. Looney Tunes. Looney Tunes. Voice for Looney Tunes.
Rod says Blank is not really... Brad's real name. I know that. I know it's not his real name.
Yeah.
So here's my, not my final question, but if you get this wrong, you've lost all credibility, mate. There is only one James Bond. That is. There's only one actor that's ever played James Bond who is James Bond. Who do you think that would be? There's no, this is a fact, so it doesn't matter. You better get this right. There's only one James Bond. That's
Sean Connery.
Absolutely.
Sean Connery.
The rest of them were pussies. Yes. James Bond, if ever I imagined James Bond to be a person, it would have been the character that Sean Connery played. Well done, Brad.
I've been down to his front yard in the Bahamas, stood outside his house, and it's just this little sort of bungalow place in a private area, and he just lives happily there. He just has he's a bit grumpy, though, in that Scottish grumpy way, but he lives a nice life in the Bahamas.
Now, I read a very interesting thing about him, and he said this. Apparently, is he still married to his wife?
Why would he?
Well, I don't know if she's still with us or not, but he said he used to knock around a bit. He said he used to be a bit physical with her because she used to like that, and people said, that's a disgrace. And he said, oh, no, you got to tap him around a bit just to keep him in line. I remember him saying that, and I thought, I wonder if he meant to say that and if he was said it with tongue-in-cheek because people took him seriously. Anyhow, I'm not asking.
That's right. His problem is he's not known as a comic, is he? He's always been quite serious. But if he's trying to reach for his comedic arsenal there, it was probably the wrong, wrong boat to strap his ski to, I reckon.
Now, when you do your interviews, Brad, you sweat up a little bit. You said earlier,
yes,
who would
I
you
do.
Sweat up more yep, over? Which one of the Minogue sisters?
Look, I'm a Kylie. I know everyone likes Danny. Kylie's the best. And what a good woman. I've been in the early days. Like I'd be on the. I was doing a radio report for a Detroit radio station, and as a joke, she was doing her interview of the same show. So they put me on with her. So it's like I've been on the radio in New York for like 18 months. So can you imagine me on the phone with Kylie Minogue? I mean, my mind was spinning. So I had so many of those little cool moments. I remember at the radio station at PLJ, Natalie Imbruglia came in to pitch her new record, and my boss Scott Shannon, he pretty much threw me into a room with her and said, "You've got to ask her out for a date." So I wrote her a secret letter and handed it to her. And she opened it in front of the whole room, all the record executives, and she read it out loud to them. I went, fuck. And anyway, I said, and it was me, would you like to go out for a drink tonight? In front of like 10 record executives and radio station hierarchy and that. Anyway, and she read it out loud and she got a bit embarrassed. She goes, all right, I'll give you a call. So like waiting for the phone call before the Cobram Blue Light Disco, if I get a date or not. I'm at home that night. I got the aftershave on. I've showered. I've put talcum powder in certain areas, and I'm waiting for a call. And it gets to about 9 p.m. I'm like, fuck, it's 9 p.m. I'm done. And then at 9:05 p.m., it's Natalie Imbruglia calls me.
No.
I'm like, oh, fuck, she told me. So, and I knew how it was going to go. She goes, she was just calling me to be nice, right? So, you know, she's got to get a record played on PLJ. So she, you know, she probably thinks I'm somebody or whatever. So she's being polite. And I said, I'm not going to give up on this call. So I just fucking kept ramming questions at her. I turned a 37-second rejection into a 15-minute chat. Fantastic. And at the end of the call, she goes, oh, all right, I might meet you at the tiki room then. Anyway, the worst thing about it was I got to the fucking tiki room. I have the whole pub in there, you know, all excited that Natalie Imbruglia is going to walk in, and she didn't come in at all, obviously. But it was my one little... Yeah, one little 27-year-old. I think I was blooming as a man, so I was very excited in those days. So that's my Natalie Imbruglia story.
Now, Brad, you've been a star. I'll just leave you with this, maybe, unless Don's got another question. Just leave you with this about James Bond. It just came to mind. Viagra doesn't make you James Bond, but it does make your Roger Moore. Just make you Roger Moore.
You used that one on the footy show.
No, I didn't. Roger, I was just handed that by the producer, and I fucked it up because I said you're Roger Moore instead of you Roger Moore. Now, Brad, mate, you are a star, and it's great to see an Aussie get over there and give him buggery and make a star and a success of your life and self. And we really appreciate you having a chat with us. This has cost us, I reckon, $500 to speak to you on my mobile phone. We'll work out how to get that money back. But, mate, we really appreciate you, and we didn't give you enough about what you've done and who you are, but people will work that out for themselves. So thank you very much for speaking to us.
Thanks, Sam, and thanks, Don. And Sam, I've got to thank you for Street Talk. And I know Don loved that segment too, and I love that segment. So a lot of that Street Talk is what I used in my early days on the New York City street. So I've got to thank you for being an inspiration in getting out there and being kind to people on the street and letting them have a chat and getting laughs out of characters. So thanks very much.
Well, thank you, and all the best.
All right, see you guys.
See you, Brad.
Bye. Well, Don, as I say, we didn't really say how big he is and how successful he's been because it's, as he said, not easy to wander over there and just become some person from Cobram and take the entertainment system by storm, but he's a star, and let's hope people got the impression of that by the questions and the answers that he gave us. So that's it, Brad Blank, and we will that's it for this week.
That was a good wind up.
I thought you were going to say something.
No, I'm waiting for the music. Where's the producer?
Around the streets late at night, I'm worried because you ain't treating me right. Come back again, I'm just crazy about you, babe.